We're back.
Welcome back, everyone. We are back. I promised to do a demo for you.
Thank you, sir.
It's going to be a quick demo. We're going to jump into that. Then I'm going to slide into the last section of the day. That last section of the day is not a big one. It's relatively small. We'll then turn right around, and you'll wrap with a wrap-up.
Cool.
We'll go from there and move on.
All right, let's get cracking.
Excellent. What am I supposed to demo?
You're supposed to demo connecting a client to TFS, so Team Explorer or the Connect dialog box.
Okay.
And if you want to pop into Visual Studio for me, we're going to go into Tools Options. We're going to show how to connect a Visual Studio client to a proxy server.
Awesome.
How's that sound?
And do you do it from Visual Studio? Do you connect it with that nice little regedit?
Regedit?
Like I connect with the build server?
No, much easier. We're
going
to do it the easy way.
All right. Bring it on down to my desktop, and we'll go ahead and connect to a new Team Foundation server right now. Here's Tailspin Toys. I'm connected. I'm going to go to Projects and connect to Team Projects in this particular section. Now, when I'm in here, I connect to a particular server. I'm connected to VSALM. I can click Servers here, and then I can add a new server. The name of the server here could be, I could use something like NW Cadence. I'd put the whole thing in. If you're going to connect http://nwcadence.visualstudio.com, this is to connect to the TF service account.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much an exam question, although I seem to remember there being something on TF service somewhere, someplace. Maybe it was in prep, maybe it was not, I don't know. Instead, I'd like to connect to the local TFS server. And there's a couple ways I can do that. Let me do this. I'm going to take this VSALM, and it's really not going to let me remove it. So I'll add a new one. Mm-hmm. And there's two ways to do it. I can type VSALM. Voila. And if you look down, you'll see VSALM:8080TFS with HTTP as the default.
Remember that earlier today I talked about not really wanting to change the path of the port because
yep.
that's baked into the clients? This is exactly what we were talking about.
Yep, and it just, boom, it's there. If I did change it, I could say, you know, TFS foo, and it could appear there. But it's very easy to just type VSALM. Now, the other thing you could do, two ways of doing it, type in the server name, or you can type in http://whack/whack, and then we could say VSALM:8080/whack/TFS. What do you think of that? Does the preview look any different?
Not at all.
Not at all, but those are the two ways to do it. All right, now let's do a proxy server. I did just set up prior to this to prepare a proxy server. So you say I go to Tools, Options, Source Control, and inside of Source Control, I'm going to look here at my plugin selection, that's here, my environment, that's here, and Visual Studio Team Foundation Server. I'd like to use a proxy server for file downloads. VSALM. And the port, the default port, is 8081. And I can click OK. And I'm in. But I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What if my proxy goes down? Now my Visual Studio is broken. What do I do? Do I just have to walk through and do all that fixing?
I believe that if it can't reach the proxy, I would hope that it goes directly to TFS.
It does.
Would it do that?
That's the brilliant thing. It just shoots straight into TFS. So I think that's a very nice thing that it does. While I'm here, I'm going to have to come back. I've got a demo that comes to the same place. But those finish your demos up, and I think that's where we wanted to be.
I appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
You bet. My pleasure. Now, let's jump over to my machine again, and in this case, we're going to be talking about administering version control. This one, again, I mentioned that it's a full one quarter of the test, and yet in reality, it's a very small topic in terms of, it's constrained. The other ones can just range broadly. This one feels very, very constrained. So we're going to sit here and deal with that constraint as we go. All right, administering version control. Slide number two, the module overview, create and manage workspaces. We're going to configure the version control proxy. My goodness, we've done a lot with proxies.
We have.
And we just connected to one, in fact. And then we're going to configure the team project version control settings. And I'm going to go one step further And I'm going to configure the Team Project Collection version control settings. Why am I going to do that? Because if I was writing these exam questions, I don't think I'd be able to get enough out of this, and I'd want to expand a little bit further. Create and manage workspaces. The study guide says this. We need to do cloaking, undoing delete, and modifying a workspace. By the way, those are three completely different things. It's all right. Deleting a workspace, specifying a workspace visibility, unlocking other users' checkouts. This is when you left the company and left us high and dry, where I need to go in and type, you know, TFS undo undo.
Someone else offered to pay me.
Choosing a default workspace type for a collection. This is actually pretty difficult to do, so I want to be sure that we jump in and show you how to do that one. It's not difficult. It's just not obvious. And then, of course, deleting a shelf set. Mm-hmm. Are we off?
This is good.
All right. Here's some resources. Notice I moved some of these out so that you could see them more effectively. And edit workspace settings. There's a command line called TF workspace, or we can use the manage workspaces advanced tab to do that. So we can do the TF workspace or the other ones as well. Cloaking a working folder. Now, you showed cloaking a working folder. I'm probably not going to dive into that in details, but you can use the TF workfold command or manage workspaces and drop down and say cloaked. Why do you want to cloak folders?
So it's basically, it's an exclusion. It's saying that from this particular parent that's mapped as active, we want to exclude some of the child folders.
Right. Here's the interesting kicker for me. If I make active Tailspin Toys, I can cloak Tailspin Toys slash releases, and I can make active Tailspin Toys slash releases slash release 5.0.
Cool.
I know. Yeah. It's really neat. However, I'm going to use cloaking for a couple of reasons. One is I don't really care what you're working on necessarily on the documentation. You may be piling together tons and tons and tons of documentation. Mm-hmm. I don't need to see those. I'll cloak that folder. All right, next is undeleting a file. This is for your reference. I'm actually going to demo it so that people will believe that I can actually undelete files. And configuring the default workspace type. Here we go into, I mentioned before, we'd go into the source control of the team project collection settings. That's right down here is where we're dealing with that. I guess I'm just writing right on top of another arrow. And then here you can set the default workspace type for that team project collection. So that means if somebody attaches to it and they don't specify one, they'll just get the local in this case, or the server, depending on what we want. And then we do need to talk about reasons for each of those.
So what's the default on, say, a new TFS install?
Local.
Okay.
Local's the default on all those new TFS installs.
What about upgraded?
I have no clue. Do you?
I do. It was a trick question.
Yeah?
So if you've got a 2010 box and you do an in-place upgrade to 2012, the default will stay as a server workspace.
Really?
Yeah. So if it's an upgraded box, server's the default. If it's a clean install, local's the default.
What if it's a clean install upgrade, migration upgrade into that box?
I haven't tried that one.
All right. All right, demo of creating and managing workspaces. Let's jump over to the virtual machine again, and we'll take a look at some of those things that we can do with workspaces. Now, first thing to discuss is local versus server workspaces. And I actually provided a link. And I would encourage you to look at the link for local versus server workspaces. I'm going to go in and type local versus server workspaces, TFS 2012, and in Bing, and it probably is going to pop up. There it is. Nope. Well, this is close enough. Server versus local. This is P.H. Kelly's blog. Not sure who that is, but I just haven't run into them before, but clearly they blog at MSDN. Oh, hey, look, there's blog.nwcadence, but I was looking for the one on site:msdn.microsoft.com. Deciding between a local or a server workspace. Definitely read this article. Understand why you might use a local workspace and when you might need to use a server workspace. And I'm going to actually read this with you. Local workspaces allow you to work offline. They reach to TFS, pull down the source code, drop it locally. There's no locking of the source files. You can just go in and edit them. You can easily restore files that you've deleted locally, and Visual Studio will automatically pick up those changes in the entire directory. So if you go and edit them outside of Visual Studio, it still picks it up. Server workspaces, however, are used in certain instances. So if you have a workspace that contains a very large number of files, it can reduce the disk space to store them, and also the performance degrades severely with the number of items in that local workspace. So if you have a giant workspace with hundreds and upon hundreds of thousands of items, it's going to be slow and pokey in a server workspace, very, very fast, or slow, sorry, slow and pokey in a local workspace, blazing fast in a server workspace. Enable Get Latest on Checkout option is only available on server workspaces. So the problems with it, however, is that it's difficult to work offline. And when you're offline, you get some pretty poor performance. All right. That's kind of the basic summary. And again, I'm going to encourage you to read that piece. I'm going to go into my Source Control Explorer window. And notice up here I have my workspace. And you need to drop down and select workspaces. And now we have several different workspaces, or well, we potentially have several. I can add a workspace here and create it called My Foo Space. And I can click Advanced, and now I can choose, is it going to be a local workspace or a server workspace? This is this configuration of the workspace. I can say I want it to be a server workspace. And should the file time be the current time or the check-in time? Some people have preferred the way that other version control systems do it. You can leave it as the check-in time if you'd like. And then permissions. This can be a public workspace with a limited number of people attached to it. It could also be a public workspace that anybody can check code into, or the default is a private workspace that I'm in. Now I'm going to go with a local box here and file time. I'll go back to current. And then I specify a working folder. And I'm going to say I want Tailspin Toys Dev Branch Iteration 2. That's my working folder. And I'm going to want to cloak a folder under that. I've got a folder under that that I just don't want to pull down. And in this particular case, it's the web upgraded folder. That was some of the upgrade stuff that may have appeared. So I've cloaked that so when I get this, it won't pull all of it down. Now, I also need to map where does this go. I'm going to map this to C:\foo. And now it says, do you want to get latest to update your workspace? If I say yes, it'll go ahead and pull that all down into the foo folder. And by the way, you can edit any of your other workspaces, and once you've edited them, you can go in, change them from local to server, do all sorts of other things that you want to do with them as well. I'll go ahead and leave that back as a local operating system, a local system. All right. At that point, we've shown local and server workspaces. We've talked about cloaking. We have not yet talked about the default workspace type. And to get there, we get that workspace type by going down to settings. When you click settings, you can see that we have settings for both Team Project and Team Project Collection. And we have two different ones, and I want to show both of them. Here's source control here for the TPC, and source control here, whoops, for the Team Project, and here for the TPC. So let's go into the Team Project Source Control setting. There's a couple different areas. Enable multiple checkout. enables multiple people to edit the same file at a time. It's the default. You can uncheck it if you have a server workspace. That would mean that I'm the only person who can check out a file across all of the files. Now that really stinks. Are there some files that we shouldn't have multiple checkout on?
Yes.
Which ones?
Pretty much any non-text-based file.
Yeah, JPEG stinks to have to merge, right? Yep. Enable Git Latest on Checkout. This is when I reach open in Visual Studio and I double-click foo.cs to open it. I start to change it. It immediately goes to the server and gets the latest version. This is bad juju. Leave that unchecked because it only gets the changes to foo.cs, not the related changes that were made to bar.cs. Check-in notes here. I can add new check-in notes like time required to build, and I can make it required on check-in so that anytime anyone checks in, they must enter some string data here. And I have a series of check-in policies. This is part of the demonstration that is actually coming up towards the end. You know what? I just demoed three modules down. Three modules down. So I better quit while I'm ahead. I'm going to cancel that. I am going to go here to the Team Project Collection, Source Control, see the changes here in Workspace Settings. We can establish what the default should be. We're going to set the default to local. Now, one last thing. Here we have some file types. And you said anything that's not
text-based.
Not text-based. So what about my XYZ files? They're not text-based, but I don't see them anywhere here as being able to work with them.
You could go and add them.
Let's do that. I'm going to add, my file type is XYZ. It'll be the end of alphabet files, and you can have spaces in here, end of alphabet files, and the file extension is XYZ. And enable file merging and multiple checkout, I will uncheck that and click OK. At that point, since it's disabled, if you have it checked out in a server workspace, I will not be able to check it out to edit that file. It'll prevent me from editing it. Okay, that's how you could add one of those to prevent those editing pieces. All right, deleting a shelf set. First of all, what on earth is a shelf set? If I make some changes to something and shelve those changes, it takes some my changes that would normally be checked into version control and it just drops them on the server. Once they're on the server, they're safe at least. Drop my laptop, spill stuff all over it, whatever, it still is going to work just fine. However, if, again, Anthony leaves and I need to delete his workspace, how do I go about doing that? Predominantly, you're going to use TF sidekicks, the TFS sidekicks, if you want a graphical way of doing it, or we'll go down into something maybe a little bit more technical and on the exam by looking at the command lines. So let's step back into the command lines, and I'm going to open up a command prompt, a developer command prompt, and I'm going to use the TF command. And I want to explore a couple different TF areas. We have TF workspaces, plural. What does it do? It displays information about workspaces in the system and updates cached information about the username and the computer name change on TFS. Whew. What did I use this before? I used it before once, and I used it in case when I moved to a new application tier and the version control cache got all screwy. Then I would do TF workspaces WAC collection colon HTTP colon WAC WAC VSALM colon 8080 WAC TFS WAC Fabric Cam Fiber. I'm in Tailspin Toys. Tailspin Toys Collection. Enter, And it'll tell me, notice I have my FooSpace, VSALM, and it's on these particular computers. Now, what happens if I rename my computer?
Ooh, your workspaces could be mucked up.
My workspaces could be mucked up. Yes, they could.
That's a technical term.
That's a term, a technical term. If that's the case, I can go whack update computer name, and then I pass in the old computer name. The old one was VSALM, and I hit enter, and it will update them to my new computer name, which in this case was still VSALM. I didn't actually rename my computer. Mm-hmm. So I can run that. So if I need to update all of that, or what if my username changed? I'm no longer Brian Keller, but I'm Keller, space Brian. Mm-hmm. In that case, I could also use it to update my old username. So those are several things that you can do with the tf workspaces command. Once again, here's the tf workspaces slash question mark. Oops. You also have the ability to remove a workspace here. I don't want you to get confused, Anthony. When you see remove over here, it doesn't mean delete. It simply means take it off of the local machine. But however, we may want to delete them because we want to clean up that mess you made, though that workspaces that you've left when you left the company. And we do that with tf workspace.
You're going to need a lot more than a command tool to clean up my mess, mate.
Look what I can do with tf workspace. I can create new workspaces. I can comment on them. I can add a comment. I can delete workspaces, and I think that's the most important piece. And I can go in and also kind of list all of them and check whether that, you know, see what they are. So tf workspace is for creating new ones and deleting them and editing them. TF workspaces is for listing them all and then doing bulk updates of things.
So that plural really makes a difference, doesn't it?
The plural makes a difference. It absolutely does. Now, that was deleting your, figuring that part out. I need to delete a shelf set as well. So we have another thing we can use, which is TF shelf sets. Now, as you might imagine, TF shelf sets itself displays information about a set of shelved changes. TF shelved sets will show the shelved changes that have occurred. So I can see those various sets. Now I also have TF shelve. So let's look at that one. TF shelve command, which is not the plural, it's what I'm going to use when I need to go in here and delete your shelf sets. So I use shelf sets to identify them, shelf swack delete to delete them. It also mentions at some point I need to clean up your messes. I've got your workspace, and I've got your what you've checked out. I have a tf undo command as well. And this allows me to go into your workspace and undo all of your checkouts. So I can just undo your checkouts. If you also have a tf status command that you can execute here as well, and that will give you information about any pending changes. So I could find out if you truly had pending changes.
Okay.
If I execute undo and you have no pending changes, it's no big deal. Now, those are the primary ones that you're going to be using at the server administrator levels. You might use undelete here, TFS undelete. Mm-hmm. In fact, that would be a great way to undelete a particular file. Problem with that is you need to know exactly where that file is to undelete it. You might use TF rollback to roll back a bunch of changes, but probably not so much. A TF proxy, no, that's pretty much it. Those are the ones that you're going to use primarily as a administrator. All right. But that does bring us back to TF undelete. And you can see with TF undelete, we need to pass in an item spec. And basically, that's just something like, you know, $whack, and off we go. Let's do that instead of from the command prompt, however. Let's take a look at undeleting a file. I'm in here in this licenses thing, and let's do something else. In this models, and I've got my customer models, customer.cs, and I can right-click and delete this item. Puts a little deleted symbol here. Let's go in then into pending changes and accidentally deleted stuff and check that in, and boom, it's gone. I don't see it. Now, how am I supposed to get it back if I can't see it? Well, there's a couple ways. One, I can look at my history, of course. So I can go back here and view history. And inside my history, I can see that we deleted customer.cs. So one thing I can do to delete this file is back in Source Control Explorer, I can right-click and I can roll back. And I can roll back a particular change set, that change set that I just checked in. By rolling back that deletion, poof, I get it back. This would be useful if you deleted stuff in change set 89, 90, 91, 92, and you just wanted to get everything back, that range of change sets. However, probably not what they're looking for on the exam. Something you can do, however. What you will need to do is go to Tools, Options, Visual Studio Team Foundation Server, go to the environment, and here we will say, Team Foundation Server, show deleted items in the Source Control Explorer. It's a simple change that you can use. Click that, click OK. Now we can see it was deleted. We can just right-click, undelete. Notice also that rollback is available here, but we're going to use the undelete command. The delete may have been a deletion that was with a whole bunch of other things that we want to keep, so we don't want to delete. We don't want to undelete that, and we don't want to roll back. There it is. Let us check that in. Once again, pending changes. Undelete, check in, and poof, back to normal. Whew, that was a lot of walking around doing a bunch of stuff. I think that about wraps it for that. Let's move back over and take a look at what we have in terms of our slide deck again. Create and manage workspaces, we did all of that. Now we're configuring the version control proxy. I'm not even gonna bother demoing this. We've done so much proxy stuff that the only thing I would be doing is really searching for a particular file, the proxy.config, and I've simply copied it and pasted it right here into PowerPoint. So you can have it for your review when you download these files. So what the study guide says, we need to configure the version control proxy. Now we've configured it inside of Visual Studio to point to it, but that's configuring Visual Studio. We've used regedit to go in and make changes to the registry so that team build can use it. Now we're going to the proxy itself to configure. And the proxy is an interesting little beast because we want to make sure that we've got enough stuff in the proxy, but also we'd like to see what is the hit ratio. How often when it goes to the proxy is it getting the files that it needs to pull back? So we want to set up that cache hit rate, set up the cache size. I really don't like the way they put it in this guide because they said setting up the cache hit ratio. You don't set up a cache hit ratio. Mm-hmm. You read the cache hit ratio, right? You don't control that.
No.
It's something that you read. So I don't like the term setting up the cache hit ratio. And then setting up multiple Team Foundation servers. It's another strange way of putting it. Here it is, all of the MSDN resources that you'll need for this file. And let's jump into installing the proxy server. Very briefly, you simply fire up, and we've done it before, fire up the Team Foundation Server Administration Console, click Proxy Server, and configure those installed features. If you haven't installed TFS at all, and it's a clean one, like Anthony showed, you simply insert the media, run the installation, select the proxy. Once it is installed, you then can make some changes. But before I get to that, I'll go in order. It's up, it's running, and you're wondering, what does it look like? What are some of the stats on this? And to do so, you log in to this port, http://localhost. You need to remote into that server, :8081, this is your proxy server, version control proxy WAC, v1.0 WAC proxy statistics.asmx. Here's a wonderful little secret. Let's say that proxy server is somewhere in Montana, and the main TFS server is in Buenos Aires. You can go to the application tier in Buenos Aires and type in that same URL, replacing it with an 8080, and you'll get the statistics there as well.
Clever.
Yeah, it is. Very clever. So click on Query Proxy Statistics and invoke it, and you're going to get an XML data output, which is going to show you the cache hits and cache misses. And you can take a look right here. In this example, you can see the current cache size. The number of requests has been 82. We've had 41 hits and 41 misses. So our cache hit percentage is 50%. And that's how you can determine that cache hits percent. Mm-hmm. By the way, there's also some, if you remote into the proxy server, you can also take a look around and see things like performance counters. There's also performance counters you can look at as well. Next is the proxy.config file itself. And this is where it is different than almost everything else. You have a build controller, it ties to one TPC. You have a test controller, it ties to one TPC. You have a proxy server, it ties to any number of Team Foundation servers. So how do you go about doing that? And you do that inside of the proxy.config file. If you look at the proxy.config file, you'll see that we have a few, you know, XML-ish type stuff that it throws up on top. And then you have this piece here where we're talking about servers. And right in here, I've put two servers. One server for Fabricam Fiber Collection and one server for the Tailspin Toys Collection. And I think that's a very interesting thing to be able to do. You can point to both of them. A couple other things. This is where the data is stored. Why do we care about telling you this and making a big deal about it? Because it's different than it was in prior versions where you would go to the registry and set this. We also have a cache limit policy. And it's based off of two things. You can choose one or the other, which is a percentage of disk space or a fixed size. So in the first case, we've got a percentage-based policy that says the cache can use up to 75% of the disk space. I like percentage ones, but you can also base it on the fixed file size as megabytes. So you could put in like, you know, 8,000 and get 8 gig in here or something like that. That's only the first part of the proxy.config file. Oh, that's sweet. It just zooms right in as soon as I touch it. All right, next is the proxy.config file is the maximum days that the content in the content can hang out in the cache. And in this case, we've got 30 days right there. The percentage of the cache size that needs to be freed up when we hit the limit. Remember, we hit 75% of our disk space. It needs to get rid of at least, in our case, 10%. So we're going to get rid of 10%. And lastly, how many hours should it be while it's keeping everything in memory and could potentially crash and lose it before it persists it to disks? And in this case, it's an hour. Then it persists all of those things to the disk. That's the proxy.config file. Frankly, that particular section, very short. Doesn't take too long to get through that. And you know all you need to know for the exam, basically, as well. Mm-hmm. All right, configuring team project. Version control settings. Thank you very much. All right. This highlighter is pretty awesome. You can just kind of drag it all around.
Can I have a go? Hang on.
Yeah, you can have a go. Yeah, look at that.
Woohoo!
Just color with your fingers. All right, configure team project version control settings. Now, this is the one where I jumped way ahead, unfortunately. I did kind of the bad thing, jumped ahead and did a lot of these demos. So I'm just going to redo them all. Nah, I probably won't do that. But I will reflect back to show people. All right, here it is. What the study guide says. Enable multiple checkout. Enabling get latest on checkout. I demoed both of those.
You did?
Configure in check-in policies for a team project. I did not demonstrate those. I will go into depth there, and I'm going to do a quick refresher on those other two. That's all it calls for in this particular section. I want to explore a little more. So here's where you can find those two things. Notice that both of those, enabling multiple checkout and get latest on checkout, point to the same link because it's just one file. It's so trivial. Configuring checkout settings. In Team Explorer, go to Source Control tab, Checkout Settings, and then right there you can enable multiple checkout or enable get latest on checkout. Those two things appear right there. And we demoed that as well. Now, configuring check-in policies, that's different. That's by the team project level. And we're going to have a little disadvantage because when you look at this screenshot, you see many check-in policies. Those come with the TFS. I totally forgot the name of it. No, you can say it out loud.
Power tools.
Power tools. Thanks. He's trying to whisper me real sly.
I was
power
trying to make tools. You seem smarter. Power Come
tools.
On.
Power tools.
You keep trying.
Penguin what? Well, she wasn't catching it. Power tools. So here are the three. I've highlighted them here that come out of the box. The rest are things in the power tools themselves, which we won't talk about so much. There's the code analysis policy editor, and I'll talk that one as well. This is best done right inside of a demo. Let's pop over once again into the demo machine and we can wrap up these particular demos and get back to answering some of those important questions and wrapping up for the day. If I slide over here and I go back over to the settings tab, and remember we were in source control on the team project collection, and that's where we had the capability to add our XYZ files and set the workspace defaults type. If I'm at the team project level with source control, this is where I do enable multiple checkout, enable get latest, I do my check-in notes, and my check-in policies. I'm going to flat out demo these. I think they're important to know. I love check-in policies. It prevents me from making mistakes when I check in. Now, the first thing I'm going to want to do is add a work items check-in policy. Now, that requires that I associate work items with my check-in. What is the problem with this? You don't have a problem with it because all of your users are doing a great job. However, my users want to keep checking into tasks that are already closed. Or they're checking into user stories and I want them to check against bugs and tasks instead. If I want them to do that, I enable work items, I get on the phone and I say to my team leads, thou shalt have a new policy. Tell everyone when they check in to check in only against active bugs or active tasks. And I do that via the phone. Notice there is no edit button here. Now I'm going to add another one called the work items query policy, which this one I say I want to associate it with all users and bugs or like my bugs. I can only associate this with my bugs. In this case, I actually can make a selection. But that work item query policy means that my check-in must be associated with a work item that is returned by a particular query. That is not available to me out of the box. I have nothing I can do except just you have to associate with some work item. So they can randomly just enter numbers. I'm going to add another work item policy, and this is the change set comments policy. This simply requires that people add meaningful comments to their check-ins. I'm going to add another one. I don't think that one. Is that out of the box? The change set comments, is that out of the box?
Yes, it is.
It is out of the box. There's one I missed to highlight. Let's add another one, and that is the code analysis one. It's also out of the box. And this requires that I actually run some code rules. So I've got to do something like Microsoft Manage Recommended Rules. And if there's any failures here, I want it to fail. But my problem is any time I use Microsoft's rule sets, there's tons of these things, and I always get a million rules, a million, you know, rejections. And I feel bad about that. So I'd rather use my own rule set. If you use your own rule set, you simply select the rule set from source code control and then enter a path in version control to that rule set. That's all you have to do. I even screenshotted that and I dropped it in on the slides because I think that's cool enough that you can do that that easily. There's no deployment, there's no registration, it's just that easy. And that's how you set up those check-in policies. Anything I'm missing? Any demos I should see?
I think that's fairly thorough, Steve.
It's pretty straightforward. I totally drew the... You do the short straw, number four versus number five. Yours went on for a long time, and I even had to bail you out on some of the demos.
And I appreciated that.
It goes so long. You had a really meaty one. This one, much shorter. You're able to come in and more effectively study this one because it's constrained. All right, let's minimize that, slide right back over, and I'm gonna go into the wrap-up here. And in the wrap-up, I'll do wrap-up first, then we'll do some Q&A, and then we'll slide right into the final.
Sure.
All right, exam best bets. Understand the difference between local and server workspaces. I pointed you to a URL, that's all I can do. Go read that thing. We talked about it. Be able to explain cloaked folders. Know the available options for configuring a proxy server. Look at proxy.config. For your convenience, I copied a whole proxy.config file directly into the PowerPoint template, so you should be able to use that. Practice setting up the version control check-in policies, especially those that are out of the box, and understand how to undelete a file. Using the UI predominantly, but also remember there's the tf undelete command because that's also can be used. That's a wrap.
Alrighty. You ready for some questions?
I am ready for some questions. Let's bring them on.
All right, let's have a look here. Can a 2012 proxy work with both 2010 and 2012 servers? Ooh. Did I just give you an interesting one?
That's a stumper.
That one I couldn't answer, I'm afraid.
I don't know. Let's throw it back to Frank.
Frank's not here.
Well, then Frank's not going to be able to answer. Let's throw it to anyone else in the room. You know what? We've got probably 100, maybe more, strong brains out there attending this presentation. Let's throw it out to you and allow you to post a comment that says whether or not that's possible.
Yeah, look, I can't help you with that one.
I can't either. It was something I'd need to reach out and... Yeah. And potentially Bing.
No, that's okay. It's a couple of questions there around, in the proxy.config servers area, can you actually point this to multiple servers or just multiple TPCs on the same server?
That's a great question. I pointed it to multiple TPCs on the same server because I only had one server. But you can point it anywhere you like. If you look at my personal ones that I have fronting build servers at Northwest Cadence, they point to different areas. Mm-hmm. I point them to our local TFS server, but also to our TFS server in the cloud.
Excellent. I'm scared to ask this. It's not really a question. No. How come there are no PowerShell for these commands? That's like pushing a great big red
that
button.
That just pushes giant buttons for me. Okay.
Better?
Not quite. Okay, there is a rule at Microsoft. If you are building a server product, you must administer 100% with PowerShell. Everything that you administer must be PowerShell. Some crazy exception is granted to Team Foundation server because it's not considered a server? It slays me. Now, there is how. Yeah, I know. I feel pretty emotional about this. I love PowerShell.
Like a red flag.
It is. I'm turning all red in the face. I'm getting up. I want to stand back up again. And it, All right, here's the deal. If you download the Power Tools, you do get a few, very few PowerShell commandlets that handle some of the version control operations. The TF, it replaced TF.exe with some PowerShell. I highly recommend you use that because it's PowerShell. You don't get back just a bunch of strings. You get back something meaningful that you can use and pipe to other commands, etc. I feel your pain. I honestly do.
So winding the clock back a little bit, Steve.
You're right. You shouldn't have brought that one up. You should have been back. My heart rate's up.
When you were talking about workspaces, one of the things that you showed there was private workspaces, etc. So the question is, when would you use a non-private workspace?
That's a great question. Non-private workspaces are very rarely used because of the way we do merges generally. However, there are times when you might have multiple people logged onto the same machine who are working against a single workspace. This might be, you might have a shared server where people are remoting in basically and doing a cold fusion development potentially, mm-hmm. where you've got multiple people working in that same directory. I don't really have a lot of good reasons for that. I personally have never seen them used in production.
No.
Have you?
Nope.
Nope, I haven't either.
And a reminder there, there's a new poll just gone up. So I've just got a little reminder there to say, can you please go and answer the latest poll or the last poll?
The last poll of the day? What is it about?
That's an excellent question. I've just got a reminder to answer the poll.
All right. We don't get to see the polls.
I don't get to see the polls.
No. All right.
All right. Kara, let me just read this. Okay, so there's a question there about can Team Explorer Everywhere connect to a TFS proxy?
Can Team Explorer Everywhere connect to a TFS proxy? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. In fact, if you type in TFS proxy connect in Google, not in Bing, it'll be like the third hit. It mm-hmm. pops right in. So yes, absolutely, Team Explorer Everywhere can connect to a proxy. Oh, great questions, folks. Very good questions. And a sharp crowd.
Okay. Can I query moves with view details one by one in history?
Okay. Can I view moves? Now, I'm going to make some assumptions here. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking you're moving your files from one place to another. That is considered a rename in the way things are laid out. So can I follow renames one by one? And the answer to that is unfortunately no, not without heroics. And I wouldn't even know the heroics to go through or even if it would be possible.
Okay, I think that might do us for the questions for now.
All right. Excellent. I think we should not take a 10-minute break and come back and wrap. I think we should just roll straight into the wrap.
Sounds like a great idea.
I'm going to turn the wrap over to you.
Okay. Down to my slides. So in terms of wrapping up there, just two very, very short things. I'm glad we didn't take a 10-minute break to come back for a 2-minute talk. some test-taking tips, and then some exam insurance, and I think we're done, Steve. So some test-taking tips. I'll start with mine first. Download and read the install and administration CHM files. I think they're a great idea. We've brought them up several times over the course of the day. They're gold. They're great. Yes. And the CHM, they're offline.
Yeah.
Drop them onto your tablet. Take them with you somewhere. This is all good news.
Yep. As long as you have a Windows tablet that can open up CHM files.
Agreed.
I'm just saying.
review the MSDN links. So, I mean, we put a fair bit of time into tracking down those MSDN links. There was a bunch of them. So even if you just jump in there, review a few of the things across the top, see what you think. But there's a lot of content there. So even if you just work your way through them, figure out which ones you're feeling quite confident with, and just dive into the other ones.
Yep, right. I agree.
Get your hands dirty. Use the product. And I've put another link there, just a reminder. It's come up a couple of times over the jump starts. Grab the Keller VM that we've been using and just practice these things. A lot of the stuff with administration, you may not have rights to do back in your office, in your workplace, or you wouldn't want to do with your production ones.
TFS delete project. Yeah,
exactly. So a few of those things, I think, if you can grab that VM there, it is fully pre-configured for you. I think that's a great resource. Some Steve tips. What do you got for us, Steve?
Oh, I should never let you handle the editing. It's hot in here.
You didn't put any tips in. That was a placeholder. Didn't you change it?
Oh, yikes. I've got some tips.
Oh, let's hear them.
My first tip is download and read and install the Chum files, right? No, perfectly. I do agree with that one completely. Next is, I use this on every single one of these. Give just trust that the people writing the questions tried to do their best. The questions aren't always going to be brilliant questions. Some might be flat out wrong. Interpret them in a way that you think the author would have meant, and answer the question appropriately.
You've said that a few times. Did you write these questions?
I did not, but I did take this exam. And many times I was pulling my hair out. I made lots of comments. This is a particularly good exam, though. I think some of the others had some really egregious errors. This one did not. It was very clean.
Yeah.
I do want to say, however, that some of the exam questions are focused on things that you don't run into in day-to-day TFS administration simply because you're using better tools. You're using underscore OI, or in prior lives with TFS 2010, you'd be using the TFS report pack, the admin report pack that would be out there. Some of these other tools that really make it nice. So you have to cut some slack to the people who wrote the exam. You're not going to be fully prepped for it, even if you're a full-time TFS administrator, just because of the way you would normally do things. You find out the easiest way to do things, and you do them that way,
exactly.
Not necessarily the hardest ways.
Okay.
All right. And those are mine.
Fantastic. Your exam insurance. Well, this not a lot of time there to go at
no.
all. At all.
Not at all. But I'm going to mention what I mentioned yesterday.
Please do.
You have got until tomorrow. I'm hoping you're out of luck, right? If you're on Australia time. But if you are in US time or Pacific Standard time, and maybe they lock it on that day, I have no idea how they measure it. But until May 30th, you can buy what's called a double shot. And if you go take the exam, if you fail it, you can come back and take it again for free. However, if you only buy one, you have to take the exam before May 30th. Good luck getting into a testing center tomorrow. If, however, you buy a package of them, then you have up till, I don't know when it is.
End of the year?
It's end of the year. It's a long time out. And to take them. Yeah. By the way, if you're coming to Tech Ed North America or you're going to Tech Ed Europe, I'm sure there might be the same in other Tech Eds, you can also get a 50% off on all tests taken during those 2 weeks at those locations. They have a test place set up.
So we're both going to Tech Ed down in New Orleans next week.
We are.
Next week. So if anyone on the Jumpstart is heading off to Tech Ed, make sure you keep an eye out for Steve and I and come and say hello.
Absolutely. And if you come on Sunday, you can see us in competing Jumpstarts or in competing pre-cons. I'm giving a pre-con on Enterprise Agility and you're giving a pre-con on...
I haven't written it yet.
You'll want to come to mine. No, but seriously, if you're down there and you see us, pull us aside and let us know what you thought. I hope we don't get any like or anything like that.
Just say, hi, Steve, PowerShell. Well, guys, that's it. That's three jump starts for us, Steve.
It is.
It's been an absolute, I've had a ball doing it. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And thanks to all of you out there as well. It has been really a pleasure. A lot of caffeine, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of energy, a lot of late nights as we've prepped to make this happen. I had a very good time. Looking forward to working with you in the future.
Excellent. And thanks to the support guys, the people behind the cameras.
Absolutely.
Appreciated your help, guys.
Huge kudos. Huge kudos.
And cut the camera before he stands up.